now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Kelsey Ray, and Kelsey Ray is a colleague of Laura Matsu, and she's appeared on Laura's show before, and she has a lot of important information to share with us. We'll have all of her website links on our dedicated YouTube channel as well as on our YouTube channel. So without any further ado, Kelsey Ray, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Kelsey, tell us a bit about yourself and, you know, the key milestones along the way, which brought you to your current state, the kind of work you do, and the important information that you're conveying to the audience, because as we go along, we'll see that a lot of these dynamics that played out in past lives, not just in our current incarnation, in our childhood and whatnot, but in our past lives, they're replaying. And a lot of people are falling into this familiarity of replaying things they don't really need to replay. So please tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I grew up in a pretty hostile environment. My mother was quite narcissistic, and she had bipolar disorder and was always, you know, angry. And it was tough growing up at home, but eventually my parents got a divorce, and that kind of spiraled me into a path of escapism with, you know, doing a bunch of drugs and kind of rebelling against my mother. And so I kind of got sucked into a dark path of drug use, cocaine use, and basically trying to find love in all the wrong places. So I began to search for my father figure outside within different dynamics with men that were generally older than I was. And by the time I was 16 years old, I was sleeping around with men that were, you know, in their 30s. And just really down a dark path of sexual promiscuity. And eventually I experienced sexual abuse. And by the time I was 20 years old, I had reached my rock bottom and knew that I needed to create a transformation and really change my life, because I was just killing myself. And so I began my healing journey. And by the time I was only 22, it was like 2 years of deep healing. So I thought I got into helping others with sexual abuse and trauma and supporting women to kind of heal their own wounds that were leading up to them acting out, whether it was through drug use or also prostituting their own bodies for love and attention. And, you know, that only got me so far. It kind of took me down this rabbit hole of getting manipulated into spending thousands of dollars on business courses and becoming a new goddess coach in the New Age movement. And I was coaching for about 4 years, and then I was deepening into womb wisdom. And then I got into that journey, and I ended up getting wrapped up into a cult. And I've only been out of it now for 2 years. I just turned 28, so I'm still pretty young. My journey has been a short one thus far, but the experience of that and all the entanglements and all the learnings of and projections of ancient Egypt timelines that were kind of weaving in and out really woke me up to the hyperdimensional realities. And I started piecing things together and really looking at my wounds and everything that was underneath what led me down that path, so to speak. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's a key point, because
in a nutshell there.
One often hears that, well, I did this and I have memories of that past life experience, of that kind of culture. And for some, and I say this without any judgmentalism at all, it's almost like a default setting where they figure, okay, well, I had a past life as a Lakota Sioux. I have to live like a Lakota Sioux in this life. I have to do the same kind of ceremonies, live the same kind of life. And to me, in a way, I can understand taking the best of every culture and every era that you were from, but sometimes it seems that people just go and repeat these same patterns instead of kind of breaking new ground or breaking away from old patterning. Could you tell us how the Egyptian memory started to bleed through?
Yeah, it was really fascinating because a lot of the work with womb wisdom, you know, we're using the power of our womb to access history throughout all of time, because when we really start to dive into the womb's wisdom, it holds all those archetypes of the collective unconscious or conscious. And so the way that I was roped into that, it was kind of a blessing and a curse in a way, because the gentleman that was leading this organization used a lot of archetypal inflation and actually started to pull out those Egyptian memories. And the way that he even, you know, hooked me into his energy and the forces that were working behind him was making me believe that I had betrayed him, that I was his lover in Egypt, and had started weaving this story. But it matched up to everything that I had lived, you know, being a priestess in the temple and being promiscuous and essentially betraying a lot of women and sleeping around. And it was really quite profound, because I was able to heal all these wounds around my sexual past with the traumas that I experienced and the wounds that I was still working through that ultimately led me into relationship with this man. But it was through that work that I began to have these memories. And then once I was able to uncover them through my own meditations, I would go back and have these past life regressions of remembrance of being in the temple and, you know, worshiping the goddess and offering my sexual life force energy to these beings, and actually witnessing the energies behind these high priestesses that were siphoning my energy as well. And I mean, seeing the remembrance of the ancient sex magic rituals as well, where there would be an altar and a bunch of people gathering around the people that were having love and siphoning their energy. And so during that timeline, all of this was returning, this collective unconscious remembrance, or perhaps even my own. I don't really know, you know, like I am here present in this lifetime. I don't know if they were just overlays, but at the same time, talking to many different people, you know, a lot of women have had these recurrences and remembrances as well.
Yes, I've spoken to a colleague of mine, well known in the field, and she recalls in quite modern times in this incarnation being put in a sexual scenario with a man. It was like a standard kind of bed kind of thing in the center of a room, and there was a gallery all the way around, and there were these people, handlers, controllers, whatever they may be, looking down at them, and as they were making love, the energy was such that they created these luminous balls of energy. And she overheard these people in the gallery saying, oh, look, they created these luminals or whatever they were, right? So that's kind of a modern version of what you're describing, where these people initiated in this group will stand around and absorb essentially the energy. And usually one or the other person that's in the sexual scenario is the one that's being siphoned off and the one that's being drained of their energy.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you see this in the child pedophilia rings as well, and human sacrifice that's still happening in today's day and age. So of course it's, you know, these ancient timelines weaving into the present time as well. And our sexual life force and our blood is the most powerful force that we have. And so waking up to this was quite a shock, but also, again, such a blessing.
How did this individual that you became involved with, he sounds to me at some level that he had some kind of energetic ability to perhaps sway or influence the minds of others. How was he able to give the impression did he give the impression that he was with you in at least one of those Egyptian incarnations, and you'd been involved with them, and he seemed to plug in at some level to your ancestral DNA memory?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was very powerful in that sense, that he could tap in, and he would play on the wounds of all the women in the course, and through our wounds, that's how he would hook these stories in or build and grow off of them. And it was essentially through guilt that he was able to really hook into me. So he created this story that I had betrayed all these women in the Temple of Immaculate Conception, and it was me that had basically, you know, invited these archonic energies in, and that through my invitation, these beings slaughtered all the woman's wombs. And so it was through that guilt that I was able to just become so undone. And then he was pulling on my vulnerabilities. And from that moment, I was hooked, because, yeah, there was a lot of manipulation through the wounds. So he would know our vulnerabilities, and that's how he would play stories through us and basically control our minds. It was definitely a form of trauma-based mind control at that point.
Did it seem as if he would identify these wounds and these vulnerabilities and then reinstall, if you will, or add more layers of the shame-based programming, and then make it seem as if, well, if you do this kind of program, if you do the kind of sex magic healing that I teach, it's almost a way of like expiating yourself or divesting yourself of whatever shame or guilt? Was that kind of the appeal that he was using? Was that part of it, or was he coming from a different tack?
Absolutely, that was part of it. And also that was part of his tactic to really separate us from our families, from our friends. You know, if you don't follow me, then you know, you're going to be spirit influenced. And there was a lot of fear inserting into our psyches that way, and just fear-based, yeah, mentality. And it was really hard to begin to separate the truth from what was, you know, really happening, because he had worked his way up into this powerful role where if we didn't have him, or if we weren't following that path, we would essentially, you know, become demons. And it was really, it's quite sobering to be out of it now and be like, how did I get, you know, stuck and wrapped up in that mess? But because I was in such a vulnerable place, and because my wounds were so exposed, he was really able to play on those, which was quite sick. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Did it seem like, and I'm just trying to understand the dynamics of how that particular guru, how that particular narcissistic predator archetype worked, because it's instructive for others who may have gone through or are still going through something similar. Did he kind of tailor make his approach to different women depending on what he's able to tap into psychically, you know, through this hive consciousness with the different women and kind of play on that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And he, at the time that he was kind of trying to come into my life, he was also showing up in other women's dream times. You know, feeling me for some time. And there was, you know, a couple women that he was trying to work his way into a little deeper at the same time. And I had no idea until after. If I had known at that time, I probably would have, the veil or so that was over my head probably would have come off. But yeah, the levels of deception, it was really quite profound. I remember one night, a couple nights after we had that experience where he had basically flung himself on top of me and, you know, let me know that we were married in a past timeline, and that he had found me again after all this time and kind of played up this fantasy. I remember being in my room and I could feel this force. It was like this dark energy that was over me. And I almost, like, at the time I knew it was him, but I couldn't think clearly. You know, it was like there was this fuzz around me. So yeah, that was something I think a lot of the other women felt, and it again brought this fear. And then we went to him and he said, oh, it's these forces that are coming, you know, now that we're doing this work, they're going to try and derail us. And it all became projected upon these other negative forces or entities when it was actually him and what was behind him, so to speak.
Yes, it's like a trap of agreement, or willingly he had gone along with this probably through many lifetimes, and he was kind of their executor, their agent working mm-hmm. through him. What yeah. particular cultural or metaphysical genre was he using as a vehicle for all this?
That's the most terrifying piece, is because it was all around the Christ lineage. And so we were praying to Mary Magdalene, we were praying to Yeshua, we were praying to, you know, the Christ lineage path and all these divine beings. And so that's really how he manipulated it so well, because, you know, why would anyone of that level and that octave of light have these dark forces moving through him? That was kind of how he was able to hide or play the good guy, so to speak, and not take responsibility for how he was manipulating all these women. But it was really profound, because after I kind of unraveled from this work, you know, a lot of our devotional energy and our prayer was going to, you know, Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary. And it was almost like we had to offer ourselves to the point where we were completely exhausted, and I couldn't connect to the divine love energy that was there. It was like really hard. We had to work for it. And then after I got out of this cult, you know, I would say Jesus, or I would say Yeshua, you know, and just pray to Jesus Christ. And there was a clear resonance of light that would be in the room immediately. There was no devotional energy that I had to offer and pray my guts out for. It was clear and simple. And so even that in itself just proved that there's a lot of dark forces that are imposing as these, you know, higher beings of light. And so that was another huge wake-up call, is, you know, there might be these beings that are showing up as light when meanwhile they're very dark demonic entities that are feeding off of us.
And the devotional worshipful energy that's exuded that you just mentioned, that in itself is like more than just a votive offering. It's almost more like a sacrifice. Just and how they got like the Catholics with the rosary beads and the repetitive nature of the alms and things like that, that just locks people into these thought loops and what have you. Now, what's interesting also is the dynamic he created of, it has the outward trappings of worshiping the divine feminine and the goddess mm-hmm. principle, but it's very patriotic, and it's very patriarchal rather, and it's very much geared towards moving the energy in his direction. Now, did he have an inner circle, and how did he regard males? Did he make any effort to heal males, or was this strictly a setup whereby women would be drawn to him and he could try to work out individual programs with each woman?
Yeah, so at the beginning it was very much just woman orientated, and it was like, you know, he was the head of the courtesan, and he had the two main teachers of this work. One was his ex that he was still presently with when I was with him. And then the other woman was the mother of his child. And so he had his inner circle of these women and a couple other teachers as well. And, you know, the whole time there was a lot of betrayal against him towards other women. And as women in the group, you know, many of them were afraid to speak up, because if you did, you'd be removed from the work. You know, there wasn't questions that could be had if you confronted them. You were kicked out. And there was so much fear there that women didn't want to be removed. You know, that was our lifeline, so to speak. And so it was really, it just fed on that betrayal of the feminine, and it kept women competing against one another. I know there's so many times where he was very abusive towards, you know, his ex or the mother of his child, and I was so afraid I didn't speak up, you know. And so for me, that was huge, and that was really hard to even look at after coming out of this, because if I had spoken up, I could have maybe, you know, supported an unraveling of this. But to answer your further question, eventually he started teaching the woman to practice with men and start to heal the men, but I'm not too sure if that's happening now. I don't know. I honestly don't know what's going on with womb wisdom at this time. So,
you made a key point earlier, Kelsey, about how for some people that are caught up in this, whether they're part of a cult or whether they're under the malign influence of a narcissist, sometimes the person going through this, they're kind of in a fugue state, Kelsey, where their volition, their will, their decision-making is somehow suppressed or marginalized, where they question themselves, they question their own judgment. And what did you have to do, or what were some of the major milestones which helped you to break away from that and help you to believe more in yourself and detach from his energy? And how did that whole process of detachment play out?
Yeah, it took a long time. I remember the moment where I just had enough, and I called him out for the spirit influence behind him. I, you know, called him out for how angry he was and how rude he was and just his verbal abuse. And he apologized, and I believed it. And then I was almost out of his grasp, but then he kept, you know, pulling me in and apologizing and saying, I'm going to change, I'm going to change. And I really believed it. And it wasn't until kind of the final blowout that I knew it wasn't going to change. And at that point, I left my body completely. It was quite bizarre. Like, I remember going to work, and all of a sudden I was driving and I was on the phone with my girlfriend, and I'm like, I am high. Like, I'm literally high right now. And I couldn't understand what was going on, but I had must have dissociated so much, because my body was finally saying no, like, you are not going to be with him. And it shook me to the core. I remember just having to ground, and it was like I was on ayahuasca. It was really bizarre, but I knew it was some sort of trauma response to everything that I had gone through. And in my mind, I kept hearing him try to come back, his thoughts, you know, trying to blame me or shame me and guilt me back and kind of say that it was all my fault. And that would play on me emotionally, which would create more energetic louche. And so I really had to define what was mine and what was his, and just come back to what was true for me. And that was very challenging. You know, he was showing up in my dream time, trying to sleep with me and chase after me. And it was weeks and until that stopped, months until that stopped ultimately. It was a full year process. He still, you know, is coming in and trying to affect my energy field. I'll have him just pop up, and it's like I can feel him checking in on me. And it's been 2 years, 2.5 years now. It was in August 2017, actually, that I last saw him. So it's been a slow process, but it's also been quite quick. Once I was able to come out of the veil completely and see that he was a psychopathic narcissist, and that these programs were playing out, not just for myself, but multiple women, you know, from 10 years ago. It was quite profound, just the unraveling and the stories of other women that came forward with the abuse. And that was really helpful. If I didn't have other women's stories, I don't think I would have come clear on my own so quickly. So it was really the power of the feminine voice in that sense that came forward. But at the same time, in that exposing, there was a lot of revengeful women and a lot of angry women towards him. And that really woke me up to kind of the darker side of the feminine as well that was playing out in this dynamic. And it allowed me to see my own darkness that played into this dynamic with him as well. which again was a blessing and also a bit of a curse, because it was quite the rabbit hole there as well.
So many people don't understand, and thank you for sharing that, Kelsey, the lack of a better term, supernatural metaphysical dynamic, because it's not just that we're under the will of some narcissist, but the fact that they themselves are a hybrid of some kind with entities working through that individual that can enter into your dreams, that can astrally sexually assault women and malignly influence them, even like you pointed out, make them feel guilty, shame-based thoughts. So it's a very deep rabbit hole. It's not just a simple matter of an interpersonal relationship gone wrong. Now, the kind of environment that he set up, was this like a temple of worship, or was it like an ashram, like some of the more Eastern metaphysicists set up? Was it something along those lines?
He travels, around the world, but at that time, the work was happening in Hawaii on the Big Island, and his son's mother was there, living there, and he had come there, and so he started offering some work, and I had, at the time, I was living there, so I was there for 6 months, and that's when kind of I got involved, because he ended up moving to the retreat center where I was staying, and that's where the workshops and things were hosted. But he's mobile, so he was traveling around the world offering different workshops in different countries. So I'm not too sure where he's at now, but he had actually one place that he tried to create kind of a commune in Australia 10 years ago, and that just fell through. A lot of people spent their life savings, hundreds of thousands of dollars to move into this community home where he was just living for free and getting everyone to cook and clean for him. And yeah, hearing about that just makes me so sick. But I'm grateful that, the word got out and that, some women were able to receive the truth about those actions, and hopefully can piece things together if they have some intelligence.
Well, it speaks volumes for your strength of character and your will and your sense of your own destiny, Kelsey, because so many women, they get caught up in that, and it could be years and years and years before they can make a clean break. And it's not just a question of a clean break, as you pointed out, even after you physically distanced yourself from him, he was still pecking away and pinging at you energetically and psychically and whatnot. And there's a number of males in our field that have these astral, what I call astral rapetoid capabilities. And they have this ability to remotely, mentally influence people because they're not quite human. They're hybrids of one sort or another. So, what you've shared with us is so valuable because it shows women everywhere that, look, I did this. I broke away. I made a clean break. You can do it too. Now, when the people have contacted you and the women have contacted you, without going into specifics, what are some of the similar dynamics that you see when women are trying to detach themselves from a similar narcissistic predator type?
It can be very challenging depending on their own wounds and what they're looking for in a partner or in the masculine figure in their lives. A lot of it boils down to insecurity and, a lot of princess programming, wanting to have their prince come and rescue them away. It can be so hard because they're so attached. They believe it's their soulmate, their one true love, and they're going to fight for that love in their life. And so to detach from that fantasy land of the twin flame soulmate relationship has, been probably the most challenging, to kind of create a sober look on the fact that these women are just desperate for love, and that, it's the self-love that is most important to cultivate so that they can truly meet with that, divine reflection that resembles that wholeness from within. A lot of it can be through the dream time, the men just trying to come back and fool around with them. Essentially, though, the deepest work that I've had to do is really to go back and, you know, understand the soul contract that was made with these men, and really the lesson that these forces are trying to teach us or these other women, you know, and heal the family of origins is, I think, the most important piece, because it all boils down to how our parents, you know, abused us or manipulated us, or just unconsciously projected their own wounds onto us. And so there's many different layers that I take women through, but it does range depending on, I haven't had such a huge case as my own. So there was one woman that did reach out to me, because, and her case was so similar that it actually sent me into a healing crisis, and I wasn't ready to support her. It was too much for me to take on, and my body just shut down. So I definitely have a limit in some shape or form, but the love bite dynamic, it's pretty easy for me to spot it and begin to work away and do the clearing. And for women, I think it's, you know, all about taking self-responsibility for how they contracted and how they agreed essentially into this dynamic.
My mentor, Barbara Bartholuk, also spoke about the enchantment when mm-hmm. women get caught up in this love bite, what Barbara referred to as the drama of the love obsession. They mistake, understandably, right? And I say this without any hint of judgmentalism whatsoever, because they are under malign influence. They misinterpret, let's say, all the synchronicities, all the energetic symbiosis between the two targeted individuals, and especially in a dynamic where one is a narcissistic predator upon the other. They mistake all that interaction in the dream time, all the telepathic stuff going on, all the chemistry, as sign of them being twin flames, when really it's just part of the obsession and the developing obsession and the enchantment. And then when it turns into the love drug feeling, which mm-hmm. should never be part of this equation, one should never feel in a love drug state when they're really bonded and connected with another person, because then they just become like a happy hunting ground for these loose eating entities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's so unnatural, like that feeling of that desperate love, that, you know, that it's like a desperate hook that you'll do anything, you'll sacrifice your life. Like, I flew across the world. I wasn't thinking straight. It was like, I'll do anything for love. I'll leave my friends. I'll do this for you. And I had only known this man for, you know, 3 months. It was like complete love drunk sanity. And that's just not normal, really. You know, there's some weird psychological effect that happens, but they'll string you along. You know, they'll place carrots in front of your face that pull on your wildest dreams, your biggest fantasies as a girl that have been programmed, you know, through the Disney movies and how our society has conditioned women to believe that there is that Prince Charming that, you know, will take care of us and sweep us off our feet. And it really, you know, boils down to the same mind control programming that these predators or forces are working through. I think it's all interconnected in some way.
Definitely, because these latent vulnerabilities are being played upon. The entities working through these individuals, through these hybrid narcissists, they're operating in a hive consciousness fashion where they can actually, entities working through them can give them the intel they need, give them information from this other individual's past memories, body memories even, and they seem to plug right into that. So it's a very deep dynamic at work, and it has very dark aspects to it. In the time we got in the first segment, Kelsey, and thank you so much for sharing all that. You touched earlier about how, because of the wounding so many women have been subjected to and the trauma over many lifetimes, nowadays an inversion has been created where And I don't want to upset people when I talk about the Me Too movement, because I can see some benefit that would come out of that. But I can also see how it could be utilized by these raging communist feminist women who've been subjected to all this indoctrination, who have entity influence working through them, and how the Me Too movement is part and parcel of this almost dark goddess, high priestess, man-hating agenda. It's like something that could have been good and cleansing and healing has itself been subverted and distorted. So in the time we got left in this first segment, Kelsey, could you talk about that, a little bit about that, leading into the second segment, where I'd like you to talk more about the goddess, the high priestess programming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can definitely speak from my own experience when I was coming out with my story, and then, you know, I exposed it anonymously, and it just kind of caught on like rapid fire, and all of a sudden it was becoming exposed that it was Padma that was behind all of this. It was really intense feeling the energy of these cutthroat, individuals that really wanted to tear him down and, you know, seek revenge, and were so angry still at, you know, the injustice that he had done. And by all means, of course, I understand the hurt and the pain and all the trauma that goes with it, but that energy of fighting, you know, the force that abused you, it felt so spiky to me. It just felt so wrong. And I just knew that I didn't want anything to do with that, you know, exposure, that next kind of story coming out, because of that energy. It felt that instead of, you know, meeting the abuser with love and compassion and understanding that the person that is this abuser is weak and is traumatized and is just a wounded little child, you know, like there's no soul in this person. Instead of meeting it with love and compassion and forgiveness, it was met with this anger and war mentality, which is, to me, it just felt like it was perpetuating the same abuse that these women were trying to heal from. And I see that with the Me Too movement, it's creating this war against the masculine and dishonoring, you know, the masculine, when in fact it's the woman that enabled this to happen. Like, if women truly took self-responsibility, and I know this might be triggering for some because, of course, not all trauma we ask for, but on some level, the setups that we go through are part of our awakening. And as women, we have to take responsibility for that and claim our karma and, you know, heal the wounds that essentially attracted through law of attraction or our own karmic imprints to, you know, hook up with these abusive relationships and men that harm us or take from us or use us, you know. And in some sense, the women have been abusing and manipulating men and perverting the true feminine to create this war against the feminine and suppression that happened against women. So it's this constant war of the masculine and feminine that I just feel, you know, Mark Passio talks about it, how the war against the feminine and masculine is a 50-50. Like, you don't have any other argument or fight that is, you know, in a 50-50 level where the balance is so equal that, of course, that force of attack and war is going to be amplified. And so it's the greatest, you know, energetic louche feeding ground is the war on the sexes. And that's, to me, where I feel a lot of women didn't truly take self-responsibility or truly weren't able to connect to their own humility to heal the wounds within themselves. And essentially it became this projection onto the men outside.
And unfortunately, it's a projection on males in general, not just, and I understand the outrage and I understand the unhealed, unrequited rage when we've been harmed egregiously by somebody, that, you know, there is an element of spite and revenge and whatnot that we have to work through to heal ourselves first and foremost. But what's happened, what I see is it's a projection to males in general, projecting out even to unborn male babies in the womb. It's like now they're, you know, a problem and causing climate change and is are harmful to the planet if they become born. So it's really a war that's been taken to extremes. Well, this is part of the healing process. Thank you so much for sharing that and bearing your soul, essentially, Kelsey. It's going to help a lot of people. You've been helping people. Please give your website and let our listeners know how they can find you.
Yeah, so I just have my website. It's www.returningtoinnocence.ca. And everything's there. I do some breath work here in Vancouver as well. So if you are in the city, definitely reach out. And yeah, I mean, as women, you know, we're here. We have the power. We are the woman that birthed life on this planet. And so it's really our responsibility to rebirth ourselves as women and to find forgiveness for what we've created and what we've enabled through our wombs, you know. Everything comes through us. And so it is. This is really where the healing begins. Thank you so much.
And if you're within striking distance, by all means, contact Kelsey and avail yourself of the work that she provides. We've reached the end of a fascinating segment with our guest, Kelsey Ray. This is James Bartley. You've been watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member. And we'll see you at the top of the next segment.
Thanks, James.